This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 of the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Open for Business. Some of my most enduring memories growing up was spending Sundays with my aunt and uncle in their beautiful house every Sunday. They lived in a corner lot with a beautiful garden surrounded by flowering plants and an outside sitting area. In summer, it was pretty blissful. They were also, without any shadow of a doubt, Francophiles. They loved everything French. So much so that they bought a second home in Nice and summered there every year. I'd go over there and eat from their obviously French-inspired table on a French-inspired chair. There were copious amounts of meat, cheese, wine, and aperitifs, of course, one which I hold dear with me to this day. It is the Cointreau. Today, I have the honor of being joined in the studio by a Cointreau, Charles Cointreau, who is the head of business development for Le Cordon Bleu International. So back in 1984, part of the Cointreau family acquired Le Cordon Bleu Cuisine and Pastry School, and André, who is Charles's father, became its president. And under his leadership, it became the most important training institution in the world. Today, Le Cordon Bleu can be found in over 20 countries with more than 35 schools, training nearly 20,000 students of more than 100 nationalities every year. Programs offered range from the culinary training to university education, the restaurant, hotel management, tourism, and nutrition fields, awarding certificates, diplomas, bachelors, and masters, including MBAs. Now, Charles is Director of Business Development for Le Cordon Bleu International, and having spent a considerable amount of time out here in the East, you might say that he's well aware of the wants and the palates of the people out here in Asia. Charles, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule and joining me here today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So before we continue, this show is called Open for Business. And for the most part, we interview people that have been around for anything from a few years to just a few months. Now, you come from a different place. You come from somewhere that has heritage, that has legacy. You know, let's start in that kind of area. Le Cordon Bleu is a name that is synonymous with excellence. When people talk about really good French food and really good training, they talk about Le Cordon Bleu. What were, in your opinion, the factors that led to the purchase of Le Cordon Bleu back in 1984?
Well, actually, Le Cordon Bleu is more than a hundred year old institution. It was established in 1895. Actually, the story of its founding is quite interesting. It was founded by a woman who actually wanted women to have access to proper professional culinary training. Back in the day, it was still a very macho environment, which was really privileged for those who had the connections. And unfortunately, women were often relegated to domestic duties.
Right.
So in 1895, she opened a school alongside the Culinary Magazine, who lasted for over 70 years. And she quickly became very successful. We had up to four schools back in 1914. And quickly it became also a destination for international students. Mm. So we had very fortunately quite a name for ourselves that was successful not only in France but across the globe. And so to make our long history short, indeed in 1984, the Cointreau family took over Le Cordon Bleu. And it really took sort of a startup feel, because we really went into, let's call it, a very sustained and aggressive development with not only furthering our implementation in France, but also taking over the London branch, which was actually opened by several of our alumni. And now, with over 30 different institutes around the world, and that was really my father who accelerated that development. Myself, over the last more than 15 years, I've been based in the region, in the APAC region, and supported some of these developments.
You see, I had a question for you that you've just kind of answered for me. Back in 95 or 96, I think it was, your father spoke with the LA Times, and he said, you might consider as a 100-year-old startup. And I was going to ask him what he meant by that. And I suppose what he meant, and taking from what you've just said, is about how aggressively you guys expanded over that period. Would that be accurate?
Well, there was, yes, the pace of our development, but also, you know, obviously when we come from a more than a century-old institution, we have to reinvent ourselves.
Right.
Have to become even more so relevant. And the whole landscape of, let's say, the culinary arts has, you know, has grown so much, especially in the last couple of decades. And we turned what was originally, you know, a very Parisian destination into, let's call it a framework for development that not only helped showcase, let's say, some traditional culinary arts into really something that's become much more localized and much more relevant in each of our individual locations. Mm. And, you know, I can go on and on about each of the locations and each of the specific developments we had, but we really took our time in trying to make ourselves relevant wherever we went. So that meant translating not only, you know, the traditional recipe approach into more of a technical approach, a more pedagogical approach, and also really having, you know, a serious conversation about how to use techniques into showcasing, you know, local heritage, local culinary heritage, local ingredients, and also taking advantage of some of the local traditions and maybe, how to say, updating them into more of a professional and more of a systematic approach that I think is really truly benefiting all those who want to eventually turn what is often an individual passion into a career.
There was a question that I had for you about how when people think about learning to cook in the cordon bleu style, I think a lot of people see it as being very technical, as being very accurate, and measurements being a very important thing for it to be what's the word I'm looking for? Perfect, almost. You come to the region of Southeast Asia where it's almost the entire opposite. Things are just thrown into a pan and it's tested and it's tasted, and people know just by taste and by smell when it for them it's done. How did you kind of balance that kind of thinking with the French way of thinking?
Well, I think we're very successful. We have over close to, I think, 140 nationalities that come to us every year. And they do come for that rigor, that discipline, that technical approach to cooking, because these are the building blocks of something that they can structure and adapt for themselves. Having, you know, most country have a strong culinary heritage. It's true that, you know, when you refer specifically to Southeast Asia, you know, there's perhaps a traditional way to transmit that culinary knowledge, you know, from the grandmother to the daughter.
They call it aga-aga here,
yes,
you know.
Yes. And I've been fortunate enough to live in several countries where this approach, you know, is put into question because, you know, the culinary heritage is a national asset, and some countries have been better than others at preserving it, but also, you know, promoting it and making it something that really can turn. Can turn whole industries into very profitable ones, and also attracting tourists, attracting other people to come and visit each of those locations. I still think that here in Malaysia, there's lots of things to be done around that. So we're, you know, coming back to the earlier statement about us being a startup, we really feel that way because there's still so much to do. Actually, without saying too much, I think in Malaysia you'll see us tackling that issue of how to bring local cuisines, because there's several, into the modern age, and perhaps having a more of a systematic approach, perhaps having more of a codified approach to it. But there's a huge inventory still to be made.
Yeah.
And I know some have attempted that, but again, we feel that we could contribute.
I mean, do you... Okay, without you giving too much away then, mm-hmm. in some ways, do you think in the future perhaps you might help to be a protector or a preserver perhaps of some of the Malaysian identity of cuisine?
It's a broad question. You know, it's an exercise we've gone through in other countries.
Right.
We've helped develop a curriculum into local cuisines, for example, in Peru, in Spain, in Mexico, in Thailand, in Japan. You know, some of these have very strong identities.
Yeah.
And some of them spanning, you know, centuries. So, you know, you also have to make this inventory. You also have to make conscious choices about what is relevant today, what is less so. When you say preserving, you know, we're not anthropologists per se.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, all of this is rooted in history, in social context. You know, bringing it back to Malaysia, you know, are we talking about Malaysian cuisine? Are we talking about Malay cuisine?
Right.
You know, not only that, but there are all other influences like Indian cuisine, Chinese cuisine. So that's why I don't want to, you know, formulate the perfect answer just yet, because there's still a lot of work to be done.
Right.
But it's a very exciting challenge, actually, to take on.
Okay. Just hold that thought, Charles. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, I'll be talking to Charles about perhaps the future of what Le Cordon Bleu will be looking at, and maybe some of the food changes that we're seeing globally and how they're tackling that. You are listening, of course, to Open for Business here on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. This is Open for Business here on Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today by Charles Quantrow, Business Development for Le Cordon Bleu International. Just before the break, we were talking about, very briefly, Malaysian cuisine and about some secrets that he can't divulge just yet. But you raised a really interesting point, because we've been having this discussion on a couple of our shows earlier about how Malaysian cuisine is very difficult to market, I think. Because even though there's so much of it, and every Malaysian that you speak to will say that Malaysian cuisine for them is the best, yet you go worldwide and you don't see it being promoted so well. Why do you think that is?
I think we alluded to it a little bit. First, you need to identify it. And as such, you know, not only does the locals need to identify it properly, but, you know, for an international audience, you know, it needs to come naturally for people to say, well, if I go to Malaysia, these are the kinds of things.
This is the dish.
Exactly.
Right.
I think, yeah, there's still work to be done in that area. But at the same time, you know, I know for a fact that there's, you know, strong, you know, dishes that are representative. There are ingredients which are, you know, a perfect match for, you know, that, again, that identity. But I think it also comes, it doesn't only come from a culinary perspective. It also is, you know, in the world of branding and communication, it is about the whole package.
Yeah.
Whether it is the type of environment that it is served in, the service, and, you know, the kind of storytelling that you can bring to those. Mm. So, you know, fortunately enough, we're not now just dealing in the culinary arts. We're also dealing with management. We're also dealing with, you know, hospitality, tourism, you know, the broad scopes, the broad strokes of hospitality as a whole. Mm. And I really think that that there needs to be a conscious effort to deal with each of those audiences. You know, there's a regional audience, there's a Western audience, a European audience, an American audience. Mm. And I do think that each of them are educated in different ways. So it depends on the ambition as well.
Right.
But again, I think the opportunities are there. You know, you look at some of the success stories in the region, like Thailand, who's done a great job at marketing themselves and at, you know, identifying those strong dishes and strong ingredients that
Vietnam
are
too.
Vietnam, yes, yeah. But Korea, Japan, each of them has had their own journey in identifying and promoting it overseas. So I think it also, the government can definitely play a part in it. The industry also needs to perhaps join forces. I think what I've noticed here is that there's a lot of independent actors, independent players, regional players, and so maybe it's a national movement that needs to be created.
I completely agree with you. You know, the Brits have failed miserably at that. The only dish that we can serve overseas is fish and chips, and that's subpar at best.
Well, I will defend the British in part because I've grown there as a child, and I can tell you that you know, growing up there in the early 80s and still living there now. There's been tremendous improvements.
I'll agree with you on that just a little bit. Okay. Now, obviously, with that in mind and how there's been improvements in the UK, world food trends are obviously changing a lot. But people becoming arguably more enlightened in terms of stuff like veganism being a big movement right now, vegetarianism more so as well. How are Le Cordon Bleu kind of looking at those kind of movements and incorporating that in some of the things that they do?
Well, I think, you know, you need to take a bird's eye view of everything. And some of those movements are trends. And, you know, you do have to follow trends, fads, and you have to monitor those. But you also have to look perhaps at the bigger picture, which is there are you know, the diet of people has changed tremendously. You know, now, you know, perhaps in the past, locally, people would adopt the local diet as the primary, and exceptionally would you know, dare to go ethnic and you know, be a bit more adventurous. Nowadays, it's actually a lot more diversified.
Yeah, I agree.
You can go Italian, you can go French, you can go Malay, you can go whatever suits your needs. You actually have the choice now, which you didn't have the choice before. Having said that, though, that's perhaps more from the identification of the different cuisines, but there's also fast food, which has taken over. People are living in a fast-paced society these days, so they're looking for convenience. They're looking for, you know, the quick access. Also, from the monetary perspective, you know, how, if is it expensive, is it cheap, is it accessible, so forth. But so it is a challenge because now people are more exposed and partly more educated, but I think the education part is there's more knowledge out there, but perhaps they're not as well as educated they all think they are. So that's our job
as well. That's a very polite way of putting things. Yeah, I have kind of come to the same conclusion, I would say. Okay. Let's just leave that where it is because we could end up in trouble ourselves if we talk too well.
Yeah, it's a very fascinating debate.
It's an interesting topic. There's a couple of other things I want to touch on before I let you go. In terms of fees here in Malaysia to attend the Cordon Bleu, it's not cheap by any standards. And I assume, obviously, there's a reason for that because you hold yourselves up to a particular regard. There's a standard that you need to achieve. People walk away with the blue ribbon. It's worth a lot, you know. In terms of return of investment, people come in and they pay, it can be 90,000 ringgit up to 188,000 ringgit, I think it is. When they leave the institution, what chances do they have of being employed and having a good return on that investment that they've put down? Because, you know, doctors would struggle to pay that amount of money, you know.
It's actually something that I personally I'm really aware of, and I am trying to perhaps find ways to accommodate that and to help locals or even help the less fortunate to have access to our education. But it's true, I will say that the Le Cordon Bleu name is a, you know, an internationally recognized name that is a global passport for your culinary career if that's the path you choose.
Yeah.
In the industry, there's still so many opportunities. There's so many lack of skills actually still to this day, and not just Malaysia, but everywhere around the world. Hospitality is about 8 to 10% of all jobs in the world. So
there's still plenty of spaces.
There's still plenty of space, and especially if you want to reach a certain level of excellence, this is where we position ourselves. Mm. We're very fortunate that the alumni that we have already have had a fair amount of success here in Malaysia. I think you'll see that we'll even give better, more value for the kind of fees that we're demanding as we're fleshing out our programs here. We're about to receive for the first time a very unique accreditation by the ministry here that again, will even further our recognition in the industry. The level of tuition, just to answer specifically the question, is a global benchmark. We are very fortunate to have a global implementation that throughout many destinations. So there's great mobility between our institutes. So it is also for us something that we have to be careful about, competing against each of our institutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are some of the considerations that we have. But I am very much aware that for certain markets like Malaysia, our fees are on the high side.
Okay. Let's stick with Malaysia very quickly. What do you have planned for Malaysia that we can actually talk about? And what's your expansion going to be like here in the Southeast Asian region?
I mentioned the accreditation. I think that's a big deal because not only our programs will be... the Le Cordon Bleu programs in Malaysia under the Le Cordon Bleu Sunway branch that we have here will be recognized by industry and the government. I think that will allow for our program to be plugged into some of the other government framework that exists here. Mm. But that would also mean that... part of some of the requirements and some of the fleshing out of the programs that I mentioned will have a much stronger industry integration component. We will be announcing this, I think, tomorrow officially. But basically, that will mean that that there'll be a significant portion of the program that will be done in conjunction, in partnership with industry, where there'll be sort of a work-integrated learning framework that will allow them to have, after their studies at our institute, they'll be integrated within an industry context, and they'll also be learning as they go, being given certain exercises, but also having individual coaches to help their skills progress.
You have a launch of the Blue Ribbon Artistry photo exhibition coming up this weekend, is that?
Yes, we're very excited by this. It's one of our long-time photographers who's been working with us. I believe he'll be exposing some of the work of some of our alumni. So we have this little gathering of alumni and promoting their work. Our president will be there, so our VIPs will be there. It'll be an exciting occasion.
Excellent. Before we wrap up then, I cannot let you go without asking you, obviously Malaysians are a foodie nation, mm-hmm. right? And you knew this question was coming. What is your favorite Malaysian dish? If I don't ask that, they will torture me outside.
Ooh, tough question. I'm a bit biased towards Singapore since I lived in Singapore.
I know
I should not say this in Malaysia, but I had the opportunity as a student to go on an internship in Singapore and to often go across the river, across the border to Johor Bahru and enjoy some of the street food. So, for me, these are the best memories I had about Malaysian food. It's not perhaps a specific dish. It's more so the social context of being able to, just go on the streets and have just a... amazing variety of flavors and scents and smells all around me, and I think that's That's an experience that needs to be nurtured and valued, and I really hope that it continues. I really liked also the mix of different cuisines that exist in just the social context. You know, being able to switch from Indian to Chinese to some of the local regional,
often all on the same menu
at the same
restaurant.
Yeah. You know, in certain countries, they're very segmented and, you know, isolated almost from one to the other. But here, they sort of coexist in a very harmonious way. So it's, I think that's the spirit of the cuisine that fascinates me the most.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Charles Quandre, of course, he was the Director of Business Development for Le Cordon Bleu International. If you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast a little bit later on. It is available via our app on the Apple App Store, Google Play, and you can find us on Spotify. You have been listening to Open for Business here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.